I'm short. I need to be a little taller than Aaron. So thank you very much for inviting me this morning. I worked really hard to keep this as brief as possible, which I cannot tell you is incredibly difficult. This morning I was reading a paper from a friend, and she included this phrase, which really resonated for me. She said, "I'm a religious person, not a spiritual person." Now, I actually really love this phrase, though I much more often hear the latter. I'm a spiritual person, not a religious person. So that brings forward the question, what does it mean to be a religious person? To be a religious person in a Jewish context means for me living in community. It means working with others. And it means paying attention. That was up there. It means paying attention to the work that needs to be done in this time and this place. Judaism is very much a this time, this place kind of practice. Every morning in our prayers, we read what we must remember to do, and it's a bit of a list. We include things like honoring our parents, visiting the sick, accompanying the mourners, and most fundamentally, to engage in learning Torah, which is a very big word. There's lots of learning and there's lots of options within that one word. But it's Torah is ultimately the source of learning for what we must do, when we must do it, who we must do it for, who we do it with. And we enter into what I call the work of love, which again may sit a little awkwardly in some ears. Loving shouldn't be work. But I use it quite deliberately because in our practice, Judaism, love is probably the most dominant verb we hold. It's work. It's what we do. We have a covenant between us and God, that's mediated with a contract we call Torah. We have a covenant between Israel and us and between ourselves. And this covenant calls us very fundamentally to pay attention. Keeping this short, in Jewish culture, we tell a lot of stories. And our stories, we often think of stories as stories to put our children to sleep. Sometimes not so successfully. In our culture, we like to use stories to wake ourselves up. So this is a story. It's a story about a rabbi who lived early in this century before the Shoah, before the Holocaust. His name was Rabbi Yitzhak Huntner, and he lived in a town called Kovno in Lithuania. And he learned under the guidance of his rabbi, Rabbi Noson Zvi Finkel, who was affectionately known as the Alter. Alter is the Yiddish word for elder. So one morning, all the students are lined up in the classroom to begin their learning. And our custom is to learn in what's called chavruta, which is dyadic learning. We learn in pairs, one on the other. The Alter found Rabbi Huntner learning by himself. The Alter was concerned that Rabbi Huntner didn't have a study partner. And he said, "Where is your chavruta? Where is your study partner?" Rabbi Huntner explained he was learning with his yetzer hara. One's yetzer hara is your evil inclination, that one that leads you astray. The Alter asked him, "Why don't you learn with your yetzer tov, your good inclination?" Rabbi Huntner replied, "I can always count on my Yetzer Hara to show up in time for morning study. The Yetzer Tov is not so reliable." But underneath the humor, there's a very interesting teaching here, I think, because what Rabbi Huntner knew in his kishkas, as we call it, his deep core, is that evil inclination as a study partner is actually going to challenge him to greater work and ultimately to greater understanding and greater love. And that angelic, if you will, Yetzer Tov is sometimes a little too bland, a little too kind, a little too generous. And we need both. We have both. We hold both. And so with those words, I thank you again for coming to our shul and joining us on Friday night and allowing me to come in and be part very briefly of your service and be part of learning with your children.
This month we're exploring what does it mean to be a people of attention. I've been thinking about how that topic applies to the world of music where I live. I play the kind of music that involves spontaneous improvisation in a group. When it works, it's beautiful. And people often ask me, how do we know which notes to play when? Well, we learn by listening. In my case, listening to wise older musicians who would say wise things to young wise guys. I had a chance to watch a blues legend named Big Walter the Thunderbird in action. Someone was playing much too loud, so Big Walter stopped the rehearsal to ask a question. Why do you play in a band if you don't like to listen to music? If I'm too loud, I can't hear what anyone else is playing. And if I'm not listening, we aren't playing together. This applies to many things besides music. Miles Davis said that the highest praise you can give is to say that another musician plays attention. Pay attention, play music, play attention. The musicians aren't just doing their own thing. They're mindful of what the others in the group are doing. That's why, in a really good jazz recording, you don't just hear what the musicians are playing. You can actually hear them listening to each other, to what none of them could have accomplished alone, and to what would never have happened without that mysterious force that some of us call the Spirit. Maybe the same thing happens in a worship service when we pay attention.
When I was in grade 11, one of my school assignments was to experience and then write about a Thoreauvian day. We had been reading Henry David Thoreau, the 19th century American writer and philosopher who famously went out to the woods by Walden Pond to live for 2 years in nature, in simplicity and solitude. I did not know then what I know now, that Thoreau had Unitarian origins, or that the Unitarian Universalist movement eventually followed the trail that he blazed along with his fellow transcendentalists like Ralph Waldo Emerson. All I knew then is that I was taken with that transcendentalist idea that God was not a human-like figure, but a divine force that dwelled within and connected all living things. Emerson called it the oversoul. I learned that Thoreau's time at Walden was not so much an escape from life, but a way to get perspective on how to best engage with life. He was a forerunner of modern-day ecology and an activist of sorts, taking an unpopular stand against slavery and writing on the importance of civil disobedience. Our grade 11 Thoreauvian assignment was to go out and spend a day in nature in solitude and see what insights arose for us. In retrospect, I see that it was an exercise in attention. I spent much of the day sitting and staring at trees, rocks, sky, a stream that wended its way through the browns and greens of the land. I had brought to this space a swirl of my own struggles, puzzles about how to handle various personal stresses. After a while, the landscape began to speak to me. In an earnest, late adolescent way, I read the metaphors, the stream that split into two branches, one leading to a stagnant pool, the other continuing to flow forward, the leaf that was stuck in an eddy right before the split, cycling round and round. Which way would it go? More importantly, how would it get out of those endless circles? I felt such empathy for that leaf. I had the same problem, how to pull myself out of the anxiety spirals of my own thoughts. I puzzled, I sat, I watched, I listened, I felt lost, frustrated, bored. I sat some more, watched some more, listened some more. I journaled. I came to a small insight about focusing on doing good outside of myself as a way out of my own spirals. Not life-changing, but it gave me some direction. In my essay for school, I noted that Emerson said you can discover universal truths by getting in touch with the oversoul through your own intuition. I'm not sure I believe in universal truths anymore, but I like the idea of accessing the oversoul through your own intuition and vice versa. Maybe you've experienced something like this, communing with nature or engaging in another attention practice in a way that allows you to hear the still small voice within. This month's newsletter offers us several different attention exercises from the UU Soul Matters Network. One of the ones that I tried challenges us to count the sounds we hear, to set aside a period of time and with a pen and paper, list all the sounds we notice. I've used similar attention exercises before. One of my favorites to use on walks is the one where you mentally list 5 things you see, 4 things you hear, 3 things you can feel, 2 you can smell, and 1 you can taste. If you've done this sort of thing, you know how it can help you pull you out of regrets about the past, pull you out of worries about the future, and pull you into the peace of the present moment. I thought this sound counting thing would do the same. I stood on our back deck, pen and paper ready, and began. Birds chirping, chirp, chirp, chirp. Sounds of traffic out front, swooshing down the hill, swooshing up the hill. The sound of water running in the pipes in our neighbor's home. A scratch of a bird feet landing on the feeder in our neighbor's yard. A motorcycle, more birds, different sounds from different directions. More traffic sounds, trucks, brakes, buses, home, horns in the distance. Rather than pulling me into the calm of the present moment, paying attention to all the varied individual and overlapping sounds was actually starting to make me feel kind of panicky. There were too many, I couldn't keep up. Even when I released myself from writing them all down, just tracking them all with my attention was too much. I could not catch all the details. I tried to talk myself down a bit. Okay, let's try something else. Don't try to catch all the details. Let it wash over you instead. Notice it more lightly. Find a stillness started playing on the soundtrack in my mind. Find a stillness. Hold a stillness. Let the stillness carry you. internal song anchored me in the midst of the chaotic soundscape. Then I used a technique that often works for me. I spoke to the God I don't believe exists. That is, even though I don't believe in a traditional God, I sometimes use God as a metaphor, a tool to access the oversoul, the still small voice within. I asked my pretend God, God, what do you want me to do here? And I imagined how that pretend God might answer. Appreciate it. You can't capture all of it. Just notice bits of it and notice what you appreciate about it. I spent some time noticing and appreciating the birds, those amazing birds. I can see how bird watching can be a spiritual practice. This approach brought to mind one of my two favorite quotations from Alice Walker's The Color Purple, the one where Suge says, I think it pisses God off if you walk by the color purple in a field somewhere and don't notice it. So what were my takeaways after reflecting on the whole counting the sounds attention exercise? What did that still small voice have to say to me that day? Reminders to not get too stuck in the details, to find that Taoist balance between over-involvement and apathetic disengagement. Do what you can, then let it go. And the reminder that attention can be the gateway to gratitude, more than gratitude. I find that when I focus my attention on something, I grow to care about it, even inanimate objects. Perhaps this happens to you too. Those cute little black-headed birds always evoke in me feelings of admiration and fondness. But so is the case for a leaf on a tree, a rock on a beach. If I sit and stare at it long enough, I grow tender toward it. The practice of attention draws me into connection, which evokes in me empathy and care. Maybe it's a bit like that I-thou concept from theologian Martin Buber. It's what happens when the boundaries between the self and the other soften. Buber located the divine there, in that space in between, in the connection. It's like my other favorite quotation from The Color Purple, in which Suge describes her rejection of the white man's God and her embrace instead of a God who lives in nature and beauty. Quote, my first step away from the old white man was trees, then air, then birds, then other people. But one day when I was sitting quiet and feeling like a motherless child, which I was, it came to me. That feeling of being a part of everything, not separate at all. I knew that if I cut a tree, my arm would bleed. A couple weeks ago, I talked about Stephen Prothero's approach to world religions, how he examines what each religion has to say about the central problem with humanity and the particular solutions that that religion offers for that problem. Christianity says the main problem is sin and offers as a solution steps to salvation. Buddhism says the main problem is suffering and offers as a solution a path to nirvana. I mentioned that the world religions curriculum our kids are studying posits that Unitarian Universalism says the main problem with humanity is disconnection, and that Unitarian Universalism suggests that therefore the solution is reconnection on three levels. connection with deepest self, the still small voice within, or inner light. Quaker Parker Palmer would call it your inner teacher. Connection with others, and connection with the web of life. I've been thinking about how the practice of attention can help us reconnect on all three levels, how reconnection stirs within us an impulse to care for the thing with which we connect. As many of you have experienced, practicing attention in nature can help us feel our connection with the larger web of life, which can evoke in us empathy and compel us to work against climate change. I will note that our environmental action team meets today at noon in the farmhouse common room. Feel free to join them. Glennis, are you here? Glennis is right there. You can talk to her and Jim there also. You can talk to them also about our eco games. It gives you concrete, doable actions to help heal our planet. Practicing attention can also help us connect with others. One of the Soul Matters exercises in the newsletter suggests focusing our attention on loved ones and noticing the difference it makes in the other, in you, and in the relationship. Also, in the realm of connecting with others as a congregation, we've been working on a new way of paying attention with regard to anti-oppression work. Rabbi Lynn talked about how attention calls us to the work we need to do. This is the work we need to do. We are striving to notice microaggressions, those moments when a well-intended comment has an unintended harmful impact. We are striving to notice when our own defensiveness gets in the way of our learning, gets in the way of seeing another's perspective. These are the things that are the focus of the Radical Welcome Group. Dar, raise your hand. Also meeting today at noon in the Fireside Room just past the Lion Hall. We'll have more opportunities for engagement in this kind of attention practice in the new year. On Saturday, January 18th, we are planning to host an Indigenous Cultural Perspectives workshop for Unitarian Universalists. In February through April, we will be leading two small groups through a 5-session Indigenous film discussion series. The more of us engage our attention in this kind of learning, the better we'll become at building connection, healing connection between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people among us. I have found that this kind of learning helps me across the board in my relationships with all sorts of people, those like me and not like me. It's the kind of deep listening that David was talking about when he spoke of musicians who play attention. It's what is required to become a people of attention. It is what will better enable us to live out our Unitarian Universalist faith. To recap, we're talking about ways in which the practice of attention can help us to heal disconnection with others, and how the practice of attention can help us reconnect and care for the web of life. What about ways in which attention can help us reconnect with self? This is the one that feels most elusive to me, even a bit mysterious. I think it's what happened on my Thoreauvian day. It's also a bit of what happened when I spun out in the counting sounds attention exercise. Taking the time to practice attention connected me with the world around me, and somehow at the same time, it also helped me to see the insights I needed to see. It gave me the space, the focus, to hear what the still small voice had to say. Whether you call it the oversoul, your inner light, your inner teacher, or something else, what I want to know is, what would your still small voice say? What has it said to you when you have practiced attention in the past? And if you try one of those attention exercises this month, what insights would emerge for you today? For now, we're going to just dip our toes in the water. I invite you to spend a few minutes now paying attention to your hands. Make yourselves comfortable in your seats. Take a deep breath. You may wish to begin with a mental greeting. Hello, hands. Notice how they look. Color, shape, lines, spots, fingernails, rings. Notice the tone of your own observations. Are you critical, appreciative, neutral? Try to be gentle if you can. How do your hands feel on the outside when you touch them? Soft, chapped, calloused? Where are the calluses and why? Notice how your hands move. How do they feel on the inside? Cold, warm, dexterous, stiff, achy? Consider their past. These hands were once tiny baby hands. Then they grew, child, teenager, and so on. What have they experienced? What objects have they held? What work have they done? What have they created? What have they communicated? Who have they helped? Whose hands have they shook? Whose heads have they patted? Who have they held in tender care? Spend a minute or so focusing your attention on your hands and notice whatever thoughts emerge. If your hands had a message for you today, right now, what would it be? What would your hands say to you? Take another moment to mentally express what you would want to say to your hands. Messages of empathy, encouragement, gratitude. Now, just for fun, just for me, can you, as you are able, raise your hands up. Let me see your hands. Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. When I think of all that has been created by all of your hands out there, all of the work that has been done, all of the people who have been cared for, it makes me feel so grateful. On behalf of this little part of the web, thank you for your care. We are spending this whole month on the practice of attention. You will each have different experiences and insights. I encourage you to share them with one another. talk with one another about how the practice of attention helps you reconnect with self, the still small voice within, with others, with the web of life. Consider with one another the extent to which these practices evoke in you an impulse to care for the object of your attention.